The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Now, were you always interested in photography? Like,
always. So I have a picture here of my dad. Here's my dad right here. So I always have this on my desk, but here's my father. He was always into photography, and he had a little kind of like a little Rolleiflex camera.
Yeah, the box everywhere. Cameras. I got one of those when my grandfather died. I don't know what Camden did with it. He might have sold it or something. It was a box camera with the roll film, you know?
Yeah.
Like, can you even get that film anymore?
You can. And young kids are shooting these cameras again. And by the way, if Cam still has that camera, it's worth over like $1,000, by the way.
I don't know if we sold it. We definitely didn't sell it for like $5. We sold it for some money. But
Yeah. They're sought after now.
I don't know. Yeah.
But there's a lot of film. Yeah, there's a lot of film and a lot of photos of me. And my interest in photography came from him. We used to sit and look at old slideshows. Like, he would look at the slides and put them up on the wall. And
yeah, my parents did that too. You had the carousel, right?
With the carousel. And you would the Netflix of the
that's 70s. All we had in those days, right? Was slides. And then what the hell do you do with them? We got slides everywhere. I don't know.
We got slides and there's photos everywhere. But the interest in visual, capturing visual was instilled by my dad. He always had a little camera with him. And he liked the sort of the spy and gadgetness of it. He always had like little cameras that were like tiny little film.
My grandfather was like that too. He had a dark room and he would show up with like Olympus came out with a new camera. It was like, I'm like, what is that?
What is that? It was this little thing that you load, like you sort of.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hey there, this is Omar Gonzalez. I'm an event photographer and portrait photographer here in New Jersey, and I love what I do.
Cool. Okay, we're not live, but we're on.
We're live!
Omar, I appreciate you coming on today. We know each other I wish I knew you for my son's bar mitzvah, but I didn't. So
he's in college now,
He is in his junior year at Indiana, stuck in his apartment, taking classes online. I can't go. It's ridiculous.
It's crazy. Yeah.
He can't go to his fraternity house. He can't go to the library. He can't go to his school, the division of his school. They have these virtual things online. He went to a job fair. There were 80 kids on a Zoom call.
Oh my gosh.
You get noticed.
How do you read someone through Zoom?
Exactly. So, all right. So I appreciate you taking the time because I know you're busy and you're always traveling. You're doing all kinds of stuff, but you do great stuff. But I want to talk about a little bit about your backstory. Like, I don't know your history. Like, you didn't just wake up one morning and say, I'm going to be a photographer, I would guess. Well, maybe.
No, I mean, the title of your podcast. Yeah, well, the title of your podcast is perfect. The Accidental Entrepreneur. I absolutely am 100% fell into it. And I feel like most of the stuff in my life I have fallen into. So I was born, just a quick life story. I was born in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Nice. I lived in Hoboken.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in law school.
Oh man, you must have had a good time.
Washington and First.
Oh, awesome.
They've
since
tore down the building and rebuilt the whole thing. I lived in it when it was a dump. But
oh yeah, most of Hoboken, those of you that don't know, Hoboken was like just very blue collar, kind of like old Brooklyn, kids riding bikes on the streets, and it just through the 70s, 80s got transformed into this Mecca.
Gentrified, and they pushed people like west, you know, in
totally
this town.
And now it's this ritzy little town that I don't even recognize anymore. But I grew up in this, it's only a mile square across the river from New York City. And I grew up in that small town and went to Rutgers University for science. That's my first.
That's perfect.
Yeah, yeah. Totally matches with what I do now.
Right. And that's in New Brunswick. So you went into
Rutgers University for science. And I studied, and again, accidental, I went in trying to study animal science.
Okay.
And completely.
Like be a vet or something?
Yeah, totally. Like vet's
which
assistant.
Is really freaking hard, by the way.
Totally.
To become a vet.
I didn't even ridiculous. I didn't even want to be a vet. I knew it was hard. So I'm like, I'm going to be a vet's assistant.
Oh, okay. I think you still have to learn.
Don't aim high. That's like aim half. You know? So. But I knew I loved animals and I wanted to work with, you know, some sort of, you know, helping animals or veterinary work. But as soon as I got to college and started to, you know, see the intricacies of it all, I just wasn't interested. It was mostly husbandry and animals as machines, and it wasn't what I wanted to do. So I switched to environmental science. And when I left school, I started working at Liberty Science Center. Have you ever been there?
Sure. The big dome, right? The big IMAX
dome. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the new accidental. I left the world of, you know.
And you got your degree in environmental science?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Okay. And I got my degree and I went into museums. That was my next career, was I was going to hop from interactive museum to interactive museum.
Does that follow your degree? Like
sort of, in that there was science, you know, Liberty Science Center. And so I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the whole visual, because the museums were shifting then in the 90s from, you know, staring at things at a wall and reading to kids got to do.
Yeah. And there's a lot of interactive stuff there.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so, you know, adult ADD. You've seen me work.
Yeah. Yeah. This is perfect for you being a photographer. Exactly. You're all over the place.
Exactly.
Yeah, fits your personality.
Yeah. So, so
would you run the exhibits for the kids and stuff?
Exactly.
And
so,
with them?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was on the animal floor. I actually became what was known as the roach guy.
Oh, perfect.
My job was to walk around with this 2-inch roach and try to approach people at the museum and be like, hey, you want to pet the roach?
So was it live?
It was live, yeah.
Oh,
and I put it on my shoulder.
Oh,
I had
like
a couple of
pet
roaches. Yeah, yeah. So
that's a big roach.
Yeah.
It's just like a Madagascar hissing cockroach.
Exactly. That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look at that. You knew.
It's the only thing I ever learned about roaches were either in New York City or Madagascar.
Exactly. Exactly. And what it taught me for where I am now, all these were steps. And that step was how to interact with people.
Okay.
Because imagine trying to get people to approach you with a roach. I mean, if you can get someone to approach you with a roach and laugh and hang out with you, then you could do it with a camera, no problem.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like you had the roach in a container. So
exactly. So I interacted with people, and at Liberty Science Center, I thought I was going to be a museum guru, just jumping from museum to museum, until someone said, you should be a teacher. And I was like, teacher?
You kind of were a teacher at that point, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that was the next accidental. Someone recommended me to be a teacher, and I started teaching just per diem, like $50 a day as a substitute.
Yeah.
And
well,
coming
that's how
in
you
like
start,
the,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, as the goofy science teacher, I came in. I'm like,
you're probably the
kids?
Only substitute that knew anything. So.
Exactly.
All these people are like, I don't know anything. Don't talk to me.
Yeah. The kids were like, you're teaching? So I'd go up in front of the room.
So it's science. You were substituting in science.
Totally.
Class.
Yeah. Okay. Science classes they put me in, and they liked what I was doing because I was like Bill Nye, the science guy, you know, right, Puerto Rican Bill Nye, the science guy.
Right.
And I taught in Union City where 90% of the kids didn't speak English. They put me in these classes where the kids didn't speak any English. And my parents were from Puerto Rico, and okay. my Spanish was decent enough that I could talk to these kids in Spanish, but teach okay. them English.
Yeah.
And it became kind of a little bit
what
of a passion.
What grade was this, by the way?
This was high school. Yeah.
Yeah. So, high school. So high school specialized. So what science were you teaching?
At first, it was just general earth science. Oh, you know, okay. they teach the kids earth like science first, and then a little bit of biology.
Okay.
And that became a 17-year career.
Wow. I didn't realize that, but I didn't know where this conversation was going.
Completely accidental. Did not want to, didn't know anything about teaching. I became a per diem teacher.
Except that there was a progression with kind of like who you were, what your background is, the kind of person you are, and it kind of fit.
Yeah.
Going to the museum and then going into tea, obviously for 17 years.
Yeah, for sure. I ended up in Manhattan. I was a teacher in Manhattan. I taught in some of the best schools in Manhattan, like the Fame School where they did dancing.
Yeah, and, sure.
Yeah. So I taught there for many years, all science, mostly biology. And again, was always the wacky science teacher, and relating it to my career now, all of this taught me how to interact with people. Kids, all ages, having to talk to principals and superintendents, but being goofy and, you know, relate to teenagers. And you know, because you've hired me before, I can relate to that age group.
Yeah, definitely. And it's hard when you're a teacher. You go to like parent-teacher night, and a lot of the teachers are like uncomfortable dealing with adults. They deal with children so much.
That's right.
It's definitely
That's
a skill going both ways.
And I've always been, one of my strengths, and I guess this is a good lesson for people running a business, is know your strengths. That if you're not good at interacting with your target market, then that stuff you should outsource. That maybe you can have someone who is talking to other people or interacting. If you're more like an introvert artist or someone who doesn't like that kind of interaction. So,
right. There's ways you don't have to walk away from your business. There's ways you can deal
absolutely.
With it and not be frightened every day, wet your pants on the way to work. I mean, people do that. They're just terrified of things. They can just get
anxiety.
Else to do.
And nowadays, forget it. Anxiety. Yeah.
And you can outsource everything. So, okay. So, but you're pretty young. So, 17 years.
I'm almost 50, brother.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Oh,
really? I only have you by like 3 or 4 years. Look at that.
Yeah, I'm 40. I just turned 48 this year.
All right. I'll be 54 in December.
Oh, so. You got hair, man. Got a little bit, I hate man. You.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, it keeps you young looking.
Yeah.
And say you're going gray, so.
Totally.
okay, so 17 years, and then what? Well, tell me the story. So you were teaching.
Yeah, so teaching then kind of hit a wall. I feel like, you know, as people, we have these like little sections of time where we need to change what we do.
You like max out, right? With what
you max out.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure it happens to you too in all the other fields, in law and all that stuff. You want to do something different.
Reinvent yourself because you're just like, this is, you know, stale. Now, were you always interested in photography? Like,
always. So I have a picture here of my dad. Here's my dad right here. So I always have this on my desk, but here's my father. You know, he was always into photography, and he had a little kind of like a little Rolleiflex camera.
Yeah,
that he took
the box
everywhere.
Cameras. I got one of those when my grandfather died. I don't know what the camera did with it. He might have sold it or something. It was a box camera with the roll film, you know?
Yeah.
Can you even get that film anymore?
You can, and young kids are shooting these cameras again. And by the way, if Cam still has that camera, it's worth over like $1,000, by the way.
I don't know if we still have it. We definitely didn't sell it for like $5. We sold it for some money. But
Yeah. They're sought after now.
I don't know. Yeah.
But there's a lot of film. Yeah, there's a lot of film and a lot of photos of me. And my interest in photography came from him. We used to sit and look at old slideshows. Like he would, you know, look at the slides and put them up on the wall. And
yeah, my parents did that too. You had the carousel, right? With
the carousel.
And you would
the Netflix the of the
yeah, I mean, that's all we had in those days, right? It was slides. And then what the hell do you do with them? We got slides everywhere. I don't know.
We got slides and there's photos everywhere. But the interest in visual, you know, capturing visual was instilled by my dad. He always had a little camera with him. And he liked the sort of the spy and gadgetness of it. He always had like little cameras that were like tiny little film.
My grandfather was like that too. He had a dark room and he would show up and like Olympus came out with a new camera. It was like, I'm like, what is that?
It was this little thing that you'd load, like you sort of. So he had all these like little cameras that had came in all kinds of format. He had medium format, 35 millimeter, and some really tiny film. And so that also gave me the interest in gear, you know, collecting gear and collecting lenses. So as far as photography goes, my dad always had it in me, and it was always a hobby for me while teaching. I would shoot, I would photograph when we went
just
on school trips for myself. Yeah.
Okay.
And where the bridge occurred was where I started to, you just need that one person. And this is probably how everyone starts their business is, you know, someone asks you for a favor.
Right.
Or someone asks you, hey, I need pictures for this. So I started doing just portraits of kids. You know, people needed a Christmas card or a holiday card, and they just wanted one shot of their kids staying still.
Right.
You know, because it's hard. You ever try
to
photograph your own
kids? I mean, I guess they're really not around anymore, but like Sears Portrait Studio, they want to go and wait and do the whole package, right? They wanted to get something done in their house or something.
Exactly. And again, businesses are a little luck is involved too, because during this early 2000s, you know, mid 2000s, the whole studio thing was dissolving. People were starting to get more on location photographs.
Yeah.
So in a forest, in a park. And so that started to grow where people wanted better photographs. You know, the school photographs just weren't, I know here in New Jersey, it's very common.
They're horrible.
Our
kids. I'm like, that's not my kid. You buy them because you feel guilty or whatever.
You feel guilty. It's all you have.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So there was a shift there in where there was a little perfect storm of people wanting better photographs of their kids and me with my camera. And I started getting better cameras. I made the move over to digital and like 06, 07, you know, started shooting digital. And
yeah, that was early because I think when Camden was born in 2000, our first camera or our first digital camera was the Sony one where you would slide the disc in the back.
Oh my God.
You take like the 10 pictures and then it would pop out. And then we had all these discs. We didn't know what the hell to do with thousands of discs.
Oh God.
Finally,
I remember
took
that
them somewhere and they converted them to, you would just pop through these discs. They had no memory.
Yeah. Yeah.
God knows how many pixels it was. It was probably like, you know, it wasn't
1.1.
Right. It was like 1.1 pixel. It wasn't even meg, you know? And that's, that was like our first digital camera and that was 2000. So that was early days of digital cameras.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you have three beautiful children. How many photographs do you, you know, because you and your wife love photographs and we've done albums together, but how many hidden photographs do you have? Like, do you have hard drives still? Do you have?
No, I think we've gotten most of them up to the cloud on iMemories we use.
Good.
But I don't know. Anita might have 1,000 on her camera that's carried over from camera. It's like, I have a picture of the dogs and their puppies. I'm like, they're 11. How could it be on your camera? She flips through it. Here's this when she was a puppy. I'm like, what?
But we
definitely have, we have albums. I don't think they've ever been converted to the cloud. It's hard. We have real film, like, you know, the reel of films, I guess when Anita's parents were alive that we have that need to be converted. I don't know. It's very difficult to get your your photographic life together. You accumulate this stuff over time and you end up with, like you said, our parents have photos and slides and all these different formats. You know what the hell to do with them?
Yeah. And there's a business idea right there. Someone who can consolidate.
Well, there are businesses, right?
Where you
send the stuff and then they ship it back to you.
They ship it back. They give you galleries. And so I started just photographing people's kids, and I started a kids photography business. That's how it started.
You didn't have a studio.
On location. And I made my first business faux pas, which was not knowing what I wanted to photograph. And so I decided that I wanted to become this great baby photographer.
Because George, who does the babies? Not George O'Keefe. Who does the babies?
Ann Geddes.
Ann Geddes, right.
Yeah, but that was my idea. I'm going to put them in pots.
Knock them to sleep and put them in a big mud pie, you know?
Exactly.
That's craziness.
Flower heads. And there's a great baby photographer in our area called Stephanie Diamond. She does little like Harry Potter costumes and the baby has like a little lightning bolt on his. Yeah, like amazing things. And again, you have to know yourself if you're running a business. And I am too energetic and too ADD. And to photograph babies.
Oh, you got to be patient. You might spend 6 hours trying to get
one photo. And I shoot so many photos. I'm moving around. I'm getting people to grab and laugh. And
yeah,
natural,
right?
Yeah, natural photos. So again, not knowing myself. And that didn't last very long. I had a assistant that would meticulously, design the baby out. And I'd be like, come on.
Right. You'd be sitting there for 3 hours while she's getting the baby ready. Right. And you're like, can we take a photograph? Already?
Yeah. Come on. Let's go. So that didn't last very long. Yeah. And I realized that my age group was a little bit of older kids. Anyone that was, four and over, we can go out to an urban location and we can photograph the kids interacting. And that was a lot more fun.
Yeah. Well, do you remember your first real job? Like on location with a party, with a group or whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah. My first real job was my cousin, my wife's cousin. She's the one that needed the holiday card. She's like, oh, can you just do the holiday card? And we went out and we...
To a park or something?
A park. And the kids ran around and I shot them. And that card went out to everyone in Westfield. And that's how it kind of started.
Because your stuff's very visual. So if somebody sends out your card.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's different because the card was of the kids interacting, like their faces.
It was fun.
Like their faces were evoked emotion. And I think I always try to strive for that we do posed pictures. Yes. But I always love the ones where the kids are being themselves, And this was on everyone's refrigerator in Westfield, New Jersey.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think if you started with a bar mitzvah or a wedding, only people they knew would see the pictures because it's an album. But if you're going to start a photography business, you should start with holiday cards because it'll go out to each person who sent out to 1,000 people,
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes with, branding yourself and putting yourself out there. What is going to be delivered to many people? So luckily, one of the recipients of that card was also someone related to our family. And they had an upcoming bar mitzvah that was just a luncheon. It wasn't even like a big party.
Right.
And I think I charged them like $300 maybe.
Just to give you the pleasure of doing it, right?
I was so nervous. Yeah, I was like,
You didn't know how it was going to go, right? You had no idea.
Yeah, I had shot already maybe like a little party for another family that was, again, in a restaurant, like 12 people. So I charged them maybe $300 and it was like a Temple Emmanuel. I didn't know anything about flash.
Right.
And then the party was at a luncheon and I just used I cringe if I look through that first gallery, but those people love those pictures.
Yeah. You have an eye for, some people do. I mean, I know photographers that don't have really a good eye for photography, but a lot of them do.
And
you have a unique, it's just something like inherent in you. You see things through the lens that I don't know, other people don't. And we had a bar mitzvah one for Camden and he was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Fortunately, we found that out later on. But yeah, he's just young and not stupid. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it helps when clients like yourself, you set up things that make it visually pleasing. Sometimes I've been to a couple of mitzvahs that are in, when you're there, they're cool, but they painted all the walls black, which is a nightmare for us because we can't bounce light. So now you have that challenge.
Oh, well, like a black wall just absorbs the light, right?
Everything. Because we rely a lot, like Leighton's... in the city is like, that was beautiful. If you look at the light in those photos, it's just super bright.
Yeah, and that on location thing we did in the village that morning. So it was fun, but it was really... like what's the word? Those pictures are very rich. Like they're very, with the colors and the contrast. It was just a nice morning. It was a great, great experience.
That was great. Yeah. That was such a fun shoot.
So how long ago did you get started? Like when was like the first party you did? How long ago was that?
That was 2013. Yeah. Yeah. So now like 7 years. Oh, okay. 2013, I did one and then I did another one on a beach. That was probably my second one. It was again, just a beach party.
Yeah.
That was a mitzvah. And those two mitzvahs sort of started spreading to the path of least resistant clients. Like who did you use? And those people more than my photographs. And this is good advice for anyone running a business. People are always watching you. I think you as a person are sometimes more important than the product.
For sure.
And so many people have come up to me and say, oh, you're so great. Like grandmothers and grandfathers, yeah. They haven't even seen a photograph.
But you have a great personality at the events and you're laughing, you're fun. And I mean, you've been to events where there's photographers and you're like, you don't even want to talk to the photographer.
Yeah.
It's a different experience. And I think you're right. That's your brand is you. I mean, they see the photos later.
Yeah.
But right there when they're at the party, they don't know who you are.
Yeah. So when I started out and again, I've never run a business before. So again, the accidental entrepreneur, I had no idea what I was doing. And my advertising and my branding and my marketing all sort of worked itself out. It was just me going to these parties and really loving them and really being genuine and talking to people at these parties. And they're like, we have one coming up next year. You know, and that's how it snowballs. You know, people want to
and they
hire
have more kids.
You. Yeah, exactly.
It helps. You know, no families with single kids. That's not good for your business.
No. But I have done single kids and they're wonderful. But yeah. Repeat business is important.
It helps. So how did you learn? So obviously, you're in business now, right? And I guess it overlapped with teaching a little bit.
Absolutely. And that was
big.
You had
to pay your bills, right?
Yeah.
How'd you learn how to run your business? The side of, you know, invoicing and you got to give a client contracts and you got to, bookkeeping and
the contracts. Actually, there's a great site called for any photographers out there, the Law Tog. It's sort of a blog for photographer. She's a lawyer/photographer. She gives a lot of advice on,
what's her name? Christina?
I forgot her name. Yeah, I think so.
Christina Scalera? There's a woman I know out of Florida who's an attorney, and her whole focus is on your industry.
Yeah,
photographers, invitation people.
Yeah, you know, and she sells contracts to photographers and downloads.
Contract shop.
Yeah, totally. So I started there, but again, learning on the job, just like when I was hired at Burger King at 16, they throw you to the wolves. You know, you're on soda duty. So right away, I mean, I'd have to write my first contract and they were very basic. They were like, I'm going to show up to your event.
And you're going to pay me.
You're going to pay me. Right. Sign here. Yeah, exactly. And I think something that was more, again, good advice for people is the things you're not good at, especially being a creative and someone who's more into the art of photography, is you got to outsource some of the stuff. And so the first thing I knew was the accounting and the tax thing, the accounting and the taxes, that had to go. So the first thing we had to do was get someone that can take care of the finances. And so that was number one. And to start off, one of the biggest struggles when starting a business, especially a business on the side, is the struggle with pricing and what to charge people.
Yeah.
Because in the beginning, you don't know what you're worth. You don't think you're worth anything. And there's also a fear. There's always a fear of that you'll offend and that you don't know what to charge in the market. And you end up undercharging. I think a lot of people probably do that.
Same in law. Yeah. And you don't want to give up the business, but you don't realize you're kind of creating a path towards mediocrity if you're not careful.
Yeah. And
you can end up getting referred to everybody that thinks that you're going to charge them $300 to, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And it ends up being this vicious cycle of cheap guy, you know, and there's all kinds of advice that you should really price yourself crazy high because you want to be in a certain market. And my reluctance to do that at first was I felt like I wasn't good enough. And I think it's important for people to really know what they're worth, you know, in any business is you really should know what your product is and don't just throw a number out there because you want to be hired for that much.
Right.
You know, so at first I knew that my mitzvahs were going to be 1600, let's just say in our New Jersey area.
You didn't have a name for yourself.
Absolutely. And you know, because you've had mitzvahs, that's a bargain in our area,
big
New
time.
York, New Jersey. Yeah. So people at first were getting me very cheap. And then the second challenge is how do you raise your prices?
You got to kind of creep it up carefully. I mean, I think you kind of need, especially in a service-based business, right? You kind of need a strategy early on. You don't have to have the price up there to start, but you got to have a strategy in place where you will slowly move up the price so you get to the point where you're comfortable. And it's also, it's a perception of value, isn't it?
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's L-A-W to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Look, if after all these years, you were still charging $1,500, $1,600 for a bar mitzvah, I'd be like, well, what's the matter with Omar? You know, like it wouldn't make
Absolutely.
Any sense. Like, why would you? And I wouldn't have, because I know you, I would still have a perception of your high value, but I would be like, well, why are you charging only $1,500? That's
yeah.
Ridiculous,
and I, you know, and it happens to us even as consumers. I'm sure we've gotten a plumber or someone's like, wow, that guy was so good. He was only 150. Did this whole job for $300 or something.
Right.
And, you know, so it happens to every business, I'm sure. They're just getting by when they, you know, they don't realize that their work is so much better.
Yeah. And then you don't want people referring you because you're cheap. That's not a good thing.
That's not a good thing.
Right.
So that was a struggle at first. Starting the business was doing everything myself for one. And I think one of the things that really was the impetus for really finding out how much I should charge and everything was leaving my day job. And I think when you have a side gig, it's easy right. to do it for.
It is because you're like, I got income over here. I could do it cheaper.
Totally. It was a game. It was playing around. It was, yeah, this is such bonus money, you know? And when they say, when should you leave your day job? And I think the thing is when your day job is going super great, and this one, you know, your side gig is super easy, stay in your day job, you know. Right. But as soon as they both start to struggle, you know, you're struggling to keep up with your day job because the other one is starting to do so well.
Right.
You That's might have to jump to ship.
Start. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did.
Plus, if you're happier doing your side gig or whatever, your other business, then you are going to school and teaching the kids. Then it's time to start thinking of an exit strategy.
Absolutely. And so the exit, it was kind of like a Band-Aid. I decided, you know, talked to my wife and I said, listen, I can make this work, you know, and leaving the day job, the first thing everyone says when you're a teacher and you leave the day job is, what about your pension? What about your health benefits? You know? And
That's true. That's probably the best thing you get when you teach.
Totally. Yeah, totally. And the best advice I got, because I watch a lot of, since I had to learn about running a business, a lot of stuff was online courses and a lot of YouTube and a site called Creative Live, which sort of teaches you, it's just online courses about the business of photography, was to work backwards. How much do you want to make?
Right.
And then figure out how many jobs you're going to take on and then expenses. And I never knew what an expense report was, a market plan, none of this stuff. No business background whatsoever. Again, science and photography don't really match up with the analytics of running a business. So
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, you kind of learn trial by fire. But that's good advice because then you can price yourself appropriately. I mean, you could also compare it to the marketplace, what other people are charging, but at least you could price yourself with the idea that you got to pay your bills.
Absolutely.
Expenses for running your business.
Yeah.
And you know, insurance, you need this, you need that. And then you'll come up with enough and then say, okay, oh, wait a second. I need 2,700 jobs next year to pay my bills. That's not good. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, what's great is that at least I knew that I had to make as much as I did teaching in New York City. So I had something to go by. because if I we were doing fine.
Were you living in New York at that point?
No, we live in New Jersey, and we've always we're here in Nutley, New Jersey. So we're and we lived in Livingston for a while and Kenilworth. We've moved from house to house, but for the most part, I knew that if I made as much as a New York City teacher, then we were good. And it turned out, just within a year or two, I was making twice as much as a New York City teacher.
That was a good move.
Yeah, exactly. It was a good move. And just knowing how to price yourself based on, you know, what was happening is you realize that everyone is saying yes. And if everyone says yes, there are only so many Saturdays for bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs. So you have 50 bar mitzvahs in a year. You know, you really can't. You cannot do it.
You got to breathe. You got to take time off. You got to,
exactly. So one of the hardest things was jumping to the next price point, because my original clients with kids and siblings had, you know, hired me for a certain price point.
Yeah.
And I think as a business owner, you have to figure out how you're going to do it. Is it, you know, how much percent per year? Educate your clients that are return clients that, you know.
Yeah, that you want to give them value and you don't want to charge them the same, but you got to charge them more. I mean, your costs have gone up and your value's there. And but then again, the cost of having them versus finding a totally new person, clearly lower. So
absolutely. Yeah. So I was doing sibling discounts and I was doing, you know, things to help out other, you know, people like you that hired me again. And it was great.
So do you, when it comes to running the business, well, obviously I see you take the photographs, but do you outsource like darkroom work and things like that? Are you doing a lot of that yourself?
That's a great question. So I think it happens with any business, but you grow to a certain point where you can grow even more. So one of the decisions I needed to make was I could have taken on second photographers called associate photographers. And these people, if I'm booked on a Saturday, they work for me at another mitzvah. And I've got maybe two or three other photographers that are out there, and the business grows and grows and we become this empire.
Right.
And there was a certain decision that I had to make. How much was I going to grow? And at my age now, and you probably can attest to this a little bit, if I was 20 years younger, I would have grown and just keep growing.
Bringing people on and...
create that, you know, sort of wealth and the nest egg for my kids and for things like that. But being later in life, things change. And I think that work-life balance and also doing things that will make you happy in life became more important.
Right.
And just when the business could have grown and gone in that direction, I realized I sort of wanted to rein it in and kind of keep it small enough where, you know, it's just me.
Right.
And I do outsource some of the editing just for more time to do YouTube. And I do have a second shooter that comes and helps. But I do mostly everything. I'm a one-man show.
Right. You know? Well, who are you doing your developing too?
Yeah. Right now I have three jobs I'm doing. But if the job is big, like a full temple and mitzvah and reception, I'll pretty much edit the first 100 for the client. And then I'll outsource the other to an editor. She's in New York and she does the rest based on my edits and sends it back.
And then, well, I mean, your albums are beautiful. So you send those out where they're bound and the whole thing with the surfaces chosen?
Those I design myself and work with the client back and forth. You know, I have this thing that I'm sure great business owners are good at, which is they trust others and they outsource. And I kind of am so nitpicky that I should have an album designer. I should have someone who's like a studio manager and, maybe, you know, but those are all costs.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And how much can you pass that on to your clients? You know, it becomes difficult.
Exactly. So instead of raising prices, I actually kept prices the same these last few years because I have done a lot of stuff. I keep prices the same and I've left a lot of the things to myself. And it's been working great, you know, as far as work-life balance, and it gives us more time to be with the kids, to travel.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's especially at our age, that's kind of what's the most important part. You want to pay your bills, you want to put some money away and eventually make your life a little bit easier, but you're not in that, like, you're right, like in your 20s, early 30s.
Hunger. Yeah,
you know, hunger. I'm not saying you shouldn't be rich. I'm just saying that the quality of time you get with, look, my kids, my little one that you did her bat mitzvah, she just started her freshman year in high school. So 4 years from now, nobody's going to be home.
No one's going to be home. And then you guys want to go out, travel, but
but you don't want to miss that time with with the kids. I mean, that's one of the reasons why you're in your own business. So you have
absolutely
that kind of control.
They're right now, they're downstairs at school, virtual school. Right, and
they're all virtual in your town?
Yeah, they're all virtual. And it's funny, when I left teaching, one of the best things that happened was I lost a lot of anxiety because I would wake up with the kids, I would make them breakfast, and I'd walk them to school. And that was something so simple in life. Imagine I would have missed that. You
couldn't do that because you had to be at school early.
Exactly. I was at work before they were out of it. So it's amazing that the things that are important when you're 30, change so much later in your life. And I think it's helped me design my business around life as opposed to having it control everything.
Right. Unfortunately, that's like this guy, there's a guy named Mike Michalowicz who writes, if you listen to his books or read his books. Anyway, he has one about profit first, about taking money out of your business. He has one called The Pumpkin Plan. They're great books. You should read them. He was on my, I think he's on this week, the episode's coming out, but he was in August. We talked. Anyway, he talks about entrepreneurial poverty, that people, they go into business themselves and they don't design the business to support their lifestyle. Instead, they're just slaves to the business. They're working to the bone. They never have enough money. They're always running
staff, too much staff, too much help.
And then they run into a brick wall when something like COVID hits.
And it's funny you say that. And the way my business was designed is COVID really just hurt my second shooter. And I kind of gave him some, little jobs to do. And my editor, I just had two freelancers that were hurt. And for the most part, we were okay because a lot of our mitzvahs became smaller. We lost money for sure, but we've been working with each family individually, and it wasn't a crisis, knock on wood, because we, yes, lost mitzvahs, but people are still doing special things and we have something coming in.
I was going to ask you that. So the business has maintained itself to a certain extent?
Yeah, we lost about maybe four or five straight out because they either canceled. They either full out canceled. Most people postponed it first.
Well, sure. You're not going to tell your kid, okay, well, I'm sorry, we have coronavirus, so you can never get bar mitzvah. You're not going to tell them that. Maybe a smaller something or other, right?
Yeah. And what's funny is if you move a mitzvah date, the kid's portion changes. We follow the Torah. Right. So the kid's like, I'm not learning a whole new,
Right. Yeah, it's true. We go maybe a week, I think you could do the same portion.
Exactly.
But after that, you're in trouble.
So, that actually benefits us because we're having these wonderful backyard ceremonies that are very intimate. And it falls right into what I love, which is capturing moments and love and the ceremonies are in the backyard, and then we're in our wait and see what kind of parties we're going to do. We're going to have to adapt.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are just like little, and then they're going to have a party in the fall or something.
Yeah. We've had some backyard parties, which have been wonderful. But now as the weather turns, people are, there's some indoors allowed, but how responsible are you as a host? It's just, it's up in
it's
the air.
It's crazy. Even with the partial indoors, do you still, I don't want to go to my gym. I'm not going inside. I'm just not comfortable with it yet. I'm not going to a football. I was watching football all day yesterday. I'm not going to a stadium, even with 20,000 people. Forget
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I know. And, everyone has a different level of comfort. So as business owners, I try to make people, I wear masks when I shoot, and I shoot from distance with a long lens. And
I saw you when you dropped Aylin's album off and you ran down by the street, and I'm like, where are you going? He's like, well, we're gonna do one outside with masks. Okay.
What's so sad is I usually go into the house, drop the album off, and we flipped it together. It's one of my perks is, again, look, not outsourcing things. I could totally ship the album to your house.
You want to see their response, right?
And I want to be with the clients one last time. And that's part of, I learned that, by the way, I learned that at Liberty Science Center. One of the biggest lessons I learned at Liberty Science Center was the gentleman who ran the customer service training learned it from Disney. He took Disney's training and he said it was incredible. It was like life-changing, that the client's experience is more important than anything.
Oh, yeah.
I look, you've been to Disney.
It's always pristine. Everything's clean. People are always friendly. Yeah, that you got to live the Disney.
I didn't want to go to Disney. My kids wanted to go to Disney. My wife, I was like, I don't want to go to Disney. I get there. I'm like, la, 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 la.
This is the best thing in the whole world.
Yes.
I love the giant mouse. Yeah, exactly. No, but look, business, MBA programs have studied Disney and how they run and operate. And I mean, now they're the multi-billion dollar empire, part of Cap Cities and all that stuff.
Yeah, but back in the day, yeah.
ABC, yeah.
It's, and that, it's that got transferred to Liberty Science Center. Their customer service is always off the charts. And we were taught early on that you're there for the customer and the client. And that transferred to my teaching, of course. I'm there for the students, but also my business is to always be, and I think as a photographer, this translates to any business, but that you can never phone it in, because I think as humans, we read each other.
Right.
And you really can't just go through the motions on an event day. This is a very special day for clients. It's a wedding.
Stressed about things.
Exactly. You know, there's decor, there's party planners. And every morning on a mitzvah day that I wake up, I pretend, again, the Disney experience, it's my day too. Like I'm getting ready and we're going.
Right. And when I'm at you putting on the Disney music in the morning, you know, getting all ready.
A whole new world.
Exactly.
Hi-ho.
You know, there we go. And then your kids follow you around the house. I'm sure that's what happens.
Yeah. So you kind of have to turn it on. And I'm sure if someone's running a restaurant or, you know, those restaurant owners that go table to table and say everything okay. And
right.
And but when I go to the temple, it's my day too. And I could see it in the parents and I could see it in the kids. And I feed off it, and it really is my day too. And it's why I go home completely exhausted by the end of the night, crashing.
Well, you're a high energy guy, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
So are you still doing most of your work is events, right? Bar mitzvahs, maybe communions, weddings, things like that, right?
And again, trying to adapt a little bit with the times. I've taken on one corporate shoot for a LinkedIn, you know, which is not mm-hmm. something I do normally. And right. I just did a website design portrait shoot for a dietitian.
Okay.
So I took on two things that were not in the comfort zone and had a blast.
I'm sure you'll bring a unique, but you know, it's a different feel, right? It's a different
Absolutely.
Vibe, totally different marketplace.
Yeah. And you know, we as men too, we don't want to be photographed. We want to be out of there as fast as possible. And so now you're dealing with something different, which is like, what do I do?
Don't put your chin down, like, you know, something like that. Yeah,
exactly.
It's true.
So now I'm interacting with CEOs and I'm interacting with, you know, so it's a different ball game, and it's good to diversify a bit, because again, like we mentioned earlier, you do live in stages, and I'm sure in a couple of years, I'm going to wind down our mitzvah.
Well, you want to work every weekend? I mean, corporate work and business work gets you in the business markets, which is during the week, daytime.
Daytime, exactly.
People aren't saying, Omar, can you come to our office on Saturday and shoot?
No. That. Yeah. So I could see that being in the future too, where I go and go to an office building and photograph, corporate America. But I don't know yet. Again, that's how I am. I sort of, you know, baby photography. I just feel it out. And if it doesn't work, try something else.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you. So what do you see? I mean, I guess I argue with people like, not argue, but are we still in coronavirus? Are we still not? Are we half out? Are parties, they're still tight, right? I mean, they're still small.
It's funny. I've seen variances. So I just did a wedding this weekend, which was only immediate family, all masks
right.
through the ceremony. And it was so personal that each chair was personalized with a name of the family member. So it was about 20 people.
So nobody was sharing chairs or anything like
that? No. Yeah. And very masked. And
did they take them off for the photographs?
Yeah. So for photos. Okay. And by the way, what I've been doing for some clients is grandparents will have masks on with the kids. Then we throw the kids out. Grandparents take the mask off. I'll shoot a second frame and then Photoshop the mask off.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and there was one family I did earlier on where all three we separated and I held the camera still, and now they're all together photoshopped.
The magic of.
Yeah. So that's what was early on. But yes, I've seen a variance where that was very maskful and, you know, some people were careful. And I've seen others where, you know, the communities have been, all these kids are starting to see each other all the time, even though
Westfield's doing half on, half off. The girls go Monday, Thursday. The other group goes Tuesday, Friday. I'm not sure why they're doing it that way. Wednesday, they're home. So
I'm sure the kids hang out after school and the kids
sort
are together.
I mean, a little bit. Yeah. They go to lunch together. Yeah.
Yeah. My son is with his friends in the park. He's got a little group that we've allowed him to be with, you know. So I think it's what you said. It's like half-ish for some, but I think it's 80% for others. You know, just like reality. But yeah, as far as for me, it's always 100. So I will always stay away from everyone. And I've done events where...
I mean, you're interacting with everybody. They're all new every weekend. So that must be
exactly.
difficult. And you're not in the photo, so I guess you could wear a mask, right? So
yeah, I wear a mask the whole time. And I try to stay as far as possible from everyone. And you know what? I never thought of this, but the difficult thing is I get most of my reactions from people from my face.
Right. Yeah. And you don't think about that. You see people. You ever see people and just like, unless your eyes really work, you don't really see that anymore.
As a human connection, they say the camera looks both ways. The camera looks both ways. And the pictures of people like, it's because they're interacting with me. And when I have a mask on, they don't see my face. It's been harder. So I've been using a longer lens, and I pull the mask down and I'm like, hey, kids.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, I think 80% of your expressions come from your mouth.
Yeah. All these muscles. Yeah.
It's not really your eyes. It's funny when you pass somebody, you know, like in an office building, whatever, you got to kind of say, hey, how you doing? I used to just like be, you know, like smile. Now if you smile, they think you're not doing anything.
Yeah, so, you gotta squint a little bit.
Like that, with your eyes. You don't even think about that stuff.
Yeah, so how's it affected you as far as business?
Well, at the beginning, business just tanked. I mean, because I deal with small business owners, so they were worried whether they're even going to be in business. So for 3 or 4 months, nothing happened.
Wow.
It's probably come back half maybe.
Wow.
I'm definitely not up to paying our bills. I mean, you know, and now all the government support and everything that's coming to an end, but nobody's back at work 100%. So, I mean, I'm busy. I try and do the podcasting and the, you know, like work and things like that Mondays and Fridays. So I can get out kind of early Fridays and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I do networking. I probably spend 80% of my time doing networking and business development. I squeeze in the work because I got to keep stuff coming in the door. But I mean, every day is a new adventure, you know, we'll see what happens.
Absolutely.
But, business owners are starting to get back. I think they're at the point now where they're like, you know what, we really need to take care of this. I think we're actually going to be in business. So they want, but I also have probably 4 or 5 situations where like you had a partner, let's say, right, in the photography business. And he came in last week and said, you know what, I'm just not comfortable with this whole Corona thing. I'm walking away. And you're like, what? And they have nothing in writing. And he's like, next Tuesday is my last day. You're like, wow. So buy me out. And he's like, buy you out? Like, what am I?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
In the process of analyzing those, and you know, they have their own valuation people and we got our own valuation people, and without making it too expensive, because it's just a little business anyway.
Yeah. That's tough.
The person leaving thinks it's worth 500,000. The person staying thinks it's worth 50. So that's always what happens, right?
Yeah. Oh my God.
That's why when you have a partner, and take it from me, if you ever have a partner, you make sure you get all that stuff in writing at the beginning, when you're friends, when you're all in agreement.
Verbal is nothing. Yeah.
Nothing. Especially what if your partner like dies and you're dealing now with his family and they weren't privy to any of your conversations debt that you, I mean, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I have some sticky, they're not big situations, but they are to the people that are involved with them.
Yeah.
So that's been some of that. And I got some probate, unfortunately, that people have died during this time, you know, not all from coronavirus, but some.
Yeah.
You know, people just passed away. Most of them older, but you know, they had compromised systems. But I don't know. I guess we'll have to see how life develops. Life's going to be different. I mean, there's no question about it. It's going to be a long time before you go to an event without a mask, at least in your pocket.
Yeah, and clients are trying to look at me. Should I have my event in May? And I'm like, I don't know what we're going to look like then.
Yeah. You know? You mean this coming May?
This coming May, 2021 is still.
I sure hope. I mean, I hope there's a vaccine by then. But maybe it won't be readily available, right? Just because there's a vaccine doesn't mean it's available.
Exactly. We're not gonna be the ones that get it. So, but my thing is, I think some businesses are adapting. The event industry got struck so hard that they really need to adapt. So.
Especially if there's like an indoor catering facility, right?
Absolutely. Well, Space in Englewood, New Jersey has a big indoor facility, but they adapted by converting their parking lot space with a big
parking lot,
big, huge parking lot. They got tents right away. They've gotten food trucks. So they're sort of working the system to still have parties.
Some people pivot. They really are.
Some people pivot. And that place impressed me because They brought all their couches and everything outside. They brought food trucks. And now
make it
I know, right? Yeah. And if winter comes around, I know that they will survive because they're going to pivot and get heaters. They're going
to they're going to do whatever they can to keep it going.
Yeah. There's other businesses that one client told me they have even a bigger parking lot. And they didn't want to do it in the parking lot. They just didn't want to deal with, you know, which I understand too, you know?
Maybe they have a lot of money. They can ride through this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's not just the riding through this. It's about people forgetting about you. People thinking absolutely. You're out of business. People are, that's why I did, you know, I stepped up my marketing. I started doing podcasting twice a week. I go to 15 events a week. I don't want people to think I died during coronavirus. They didn't hear from me. You know, it's funny, yeah, but it's not that funny.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So you want to, I remember when we, I guess we heard from you before and then you dropped the album off.
Yeah.
And I had said to Anita, boy, what is Omar doing like during this whole thing? Because our kids, you know, we're not at that stage anymore. They're not getting married and they're past the bar mitzvahs, but we'll get there eventually. Hopefully you'll still be a photographer then.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So we were wondering, sure, what's going on with you? That's what made me reach out and said, oh, I got to get Omar on the podcast. I want to talk about his business, see what he's doing. And then you said, oh, I have a podcast. So listen, while we're on the mic, so let's talk about your podcast. What's the name of, you have a fun podcast and a new one you're working on, right? But yeah, they're both available.
Not yet. So the one with my friend is called the Mo and O Photo Show. Okay. I'm also on Omar Gonzalez Photography on YouTube. I do mostly little camera reviews.
And right.
That's where my teaching bug stays alive because I teach about photography. I teach about cameras, but I'm also I used to be a goofball teacher. So if you watch my channel, I'm always coming up with stupid things that make me laugh. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, also your photography is on Omar Gonzalez. What is it?
Photography.
Photography.
Yeah, you can. Yeah,
we'll put all the links in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, you'll find me. And there's a soccer player, by the way, called Omar Gonzalez. So
I did a search for you because I was looking for someone. I'm like, oh, that's not Omar.
Who's that guy? Yeah,
right. Is that pretty funny?
Yeah. So yeah, and
the Mo O Photo Show.
Yeah, the Mo and O, just the letter O, Photo Show,
and spelled out.
Yeah, and spelled out.
Okay.
And we're on YouTube as well, so you could see us video. And so I produce that as well. But I also, that's just with my buddy, and we have a great time.
Where do you record it?
We used to record it in this home office here.
Okay.
But now.
He can't come.
Yeah, he can't come. So we actually met up recently outdoors. There's like the last few episodes we've been getting closer.
And do
yeah,
it
yeah.
Outside.
Yeah, we remote podcasted, which was great.
Yeah.
And now we're doing what you and I are doing. So on Zoom, we'll hook up and do a couple of episodes. But the solo podcast I'm doing is a different direction where I want to interview other photographers
and talk about the industry and the business.
And yeah, so and that's forth. Starting. That's going to be called The Photographer's Eye. And
like the name.
Yeah, yeah. I even have like a little, I got the website and I also have like a little eyeball. So I'm going to make t-shirts.
Okay. File a trademark.
Oh, thank you. Law talk. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Well, you could put a TM next to it, right? That's just common law. That'll give you some protection. But if you file the registered mark, which is an R with a circle, once it gets released, then that'll go retroactive to when you started
cool.
it. So you should definitely
look at that.
A couple $100.
Yeah. Good advice. Free advice here. All right, charge me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And I used to do the same thing. I have like a little, so I have this, you know, little arm, and I have another arm behind my screen here where people used to sit here. But they can't come here anymore. So now I do it on Zoom. But I would take like I pack up all like the mixing board and everything and go to like a restaurant or whatever.
Yeah.
Do it, like on location. It was like kind of fun. But
yeah,
now,
yeah.
Now I can't.
Yeah. You need these mics with the.
Is that? It's an XLR mic. That's funny. Yeah. I have the same.
The drum stand.
I have the same stand. It's on stage.
Yeah. On stage, baby. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm. That's what my camera's on. I found a little mount for the camera.
Yeah, it's great for mics. We bring these outside sometimes.
Yep, I got two of those, and that makes it a lot easier with the microphones. So, yeah, it's all awesome stuff, though. But I can't recommend you enough. If anybody wants to see all your stuff, go to Omar Gonzalez Photography.
Check
it out on YouTube. We'll put all it in, all the stuff in the show notes. And I can't thank you enough for spending, I don't know, almost an hour with me.
That was awesome. That was so fun. It was great. Always great talking to you.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.